This is KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on your radio or kptz.org if you're listening online. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around town? The guy who puts your groceries into the bag at Safeway. The nice guy who's so helpful at Benita's Pet Store. The woman who walks along the street in 1880s clothes, no matter what the weather. This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Port Townsend. We talk with all sorts of people who make up the eclectic mix in Jefferson County. We talk about their lives, their dreams, how they ended up on the northwestern edge of the USA. We'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and teenage beauty queens. We'll find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in Port Townsend. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd like to meet them. For the past couple of episodes of Our Town, we've been talking about a fascinating program called Drug Court. It's a program that's designed to not send people with drug problems to jail. It's a program that's set up to lend many helping hands so that at least some of the people with drug problems find their way out of the pit. It has some remarkable successes and, unfortunately, some failures. It helps in the usual ways with counseling and residential care, but it also helps with basic life realities. I bet many of you have never really thought about it, but when an addict hits bottom and is trying to come back up, he or she doesn't even have an address, much less a job or a driver's license. How do they ever manage to get reintegrated into society? Drug Court is making some meaningful differences in the lives of many people in this town. In our first Drug Court-related segment, we talk with Scott Rosecrans, the former prosecutor for Jefferson County, who had a giant impact on the growth of the program. In the next segment, I interviewed two former meth addicts, who thanks to Drug Court are now living productive lives with jobs, families, and people who love and appreciate them. That interview had us all in tears. Today's show helps close the circle. My guest today is Michael Haas, the current Jefferson County prosecutor who took office only last January. He is literally the man who decides who does or doesn't get a chance to participate in drug court. But of course, that's not fully his job. He wears many, many hats. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Good morning.
Let's start the way I usually do. Are you a Port Townsend native, or did you end up here by a circuitous route?
I was actually raised in southeast Alaska in a small town, not unlike Port Townsend, though. It's an arts
community.
A little bit colder, yes. And I ended up here through a circuitous route. My wife and I first came here in 1992. We've moved away for other job opportunities, but kept coming back, and this is home, and it's where we're raising our four children.
Wow, four kids. How old are they?
They are six, almost nine. I have to take a run at this. 11 and 12.
Aha, just about to hit the dreaded teenage years.
That's true, but they're all great kids, so we're very fortunate.
Okay, well, you know, most of us are aware that the prosecutor prosecutes bad guys, but we don't really understand what the scope of your office is. Can you just sort of give us a rundown of what your office handles?
Sure. And I actually made a list so I didn't forget anything. So in our the criminal aspect of the office, which is probably about 80% of what the office does, we've got a felony unit, a district court unit, and a juvenile unit. The felony unit deals with cases where prison is a possibility. District court is more typical cases like DUIs to bar fights, that sort of thing. And then juveniles can be anything from a minor in possession charge up to serious felonies. Then we've got therapeutic courts, drug court, which we're here to talk about today, mental health court, and topside, which is a therapeutic court for juveniles. We also provide victim services. We represent the state in ITA hearings where someone is accused of having serious mental health problems, so much so that they need to be forcibly sent to Western State Hospital, for example. We handle child support matters, truancy matters. We are the effectively county corporate council. We represent the county in all of its civil components, so whether it's a land use issue, whether it's an employment issue, or anything of that nature. And then, of course, we have coroner duty. And finally, I'm a member of WAPA, which is the Washington Association of Prosecuting Attorneys, and we have a very wide-ranging policy impact on criminal law in Washington State.
Wow, that's quite a load. Now, surely you're not there all by yourself. How many people are in your office?
I have four deputy prosecutors and a support staff of seven.
Okay. And the deputy prosecutors, do they each have a clear responsibility? Is it sort of divided?
Yes. We have one deputy prosecutor that's assigned to civil matters. That's David Alvarez. Just hired a chief deputy prosecuting attorney, Julie Trejo, and she sort of has a role both in criminal and in civil. She's a highly experienced litigator, and so I'm very grateful that she's on board now. And then I've got two younger attorneys, and they sort of split up the district court duties and juvenile court duties, but they also handle child support and all those other issues that crop up in the office.
Good.
And then we all share coroner duty.
Okay. Now, you're only basically 6 months into the job. Prior to this, we sort of skipped over it. What kind of legal work were you involved in?
Well, I was a deputy prosecutor in Mason County for approximately 8 years and a deputy prosecutor here in Jefferson County for, I think it was about 3.5 years. And then I've been in private practice for the bulk of the rest of my 27 years. During that time, I picked up significant experience handling criminal defense issues from the public defense perspective. I was one of a small team of attorneys that went out to work in Grant County, which had at that time had probably the worst public defense system in the state of Washington. They were under a court injunction, and so I was part of that team that was there to help clean that up. And then I headed up the felony public defense program in Okanagan County for a while. I've also done insurance defense work and a little bit of family law.
So. Wow. So far in your first 6 months, have you run into any type of cases that you didn't have experience with before?
I've been somewhat involved in some of the land use issues that are coming up, or I'm trying to become more familiar with those issues. For example, there's the issue related to the timber harvesting down in Port Ludlow. So I'm not actively involved in that, but I'm trying to become aware of that issue, and that's something that's outside of my bailiwick.
I see, because it sounds like you had pretty broad experience. Of course, it sounds also like you've walked both sides of the line. You've been defending criminals at one point in private practice, and now you're prosecuting criminals.
Of course, then they were alleged criminals.
Alleged criminals, sorry. Of course, until it's decided by the court, right?
Exactly. So, my experience is as a litigator.
Okay. Well, what's the crime rate like in Jefferson County? I mean, we have about, 30,000 people?
That's correct.
What's the crime rate like?
It's relatively low, and we're fortunate. I mean, this is one of those areas where I will let my kids walk up to Aldrich's, and, you know, we probably don't lock our doors as much as we should, but we're relatively fortunate that crime seems to be down. Most of the crime that we have is either drug-related or property crime. Violent crime does exist, but it's relatively limited, and in most cases, the violent crime involves people that know each other. So in terms of stranger attacks or things like that, those are extraordinarily rare.
And it doesn't seem like we have a very high murder rate in this town.
Knock on wood. I hope you didn't just jinx me.
Yeah, me too. Sorry about that. In the past couple of months, what have been one or two cases where the public would really be curious about what's going on, interesting cases?
Well, I think that one of the issues that I've seen is a fair number of date rape cases involving young people, anywhere from ages of 15 to 24.
Really?
And there is a common component is that there's alcohol involved, and you know, young people put themselves in situations that place themselves at great risk. And so with Ms. Trejo on board, who has experience in domestic violence, we'll be taking a much closer look at some of those cases and probably prosecuting those more aggressively than might have been the case in prior years.
You know, I've certainly read about date rape drugs. Mm-hmm. How do you determine that there were drugs involved? Is there a test that can determine if someone has it in their blood?
That's entirely possible, but the date rape drug that I'm talking about has been around for millennia. It's called alcohol.
Oh, okay. You're not talking about the slip someone something in your...
That does happen, but we haven't seen that. I can't think of a rape case that we've had in recent years that that's been the case. But alcohol, certainly, in almost all of them.
Right, right. There was a case a couple of months ago where Don's Pharmacy was robbed of, from what I read, a substantial amount of drugs of all sorts. Were most of those recovered, or are they out around town?
We believe that they were destroyed by the defendant's mother, and we've seen evidence of that. Detective Bogues from the Port Townsend Police Department and myself went up to the home of the mother, and at this point in time, we're reasonably confident that most of those drugs were destroyed. We've not seen a major influx of those drugs into the system, if you will. So I'm crossing our fingers, but I think we got them.
That's good to hear. Well, that sort of segues us a bit into drugs. I mean, what are the major drug problems? Alcohol, you've already discussed a bit, but
right.
Illicit drugs, what's going on?
Well, again, the most abused drug in this country is alcohol. The in terms of the other drugs that we see, methamphetamine is still very, very large in this county. Heroin is starting to come back, and things like OxyContin are still around, which is a legal drug, but it's being abused. So that's meth is probably still the number one that we see.
Is meth something that people can make up themselves? Is that why they put allergy medicine behind the counter?
That's correct, actually. In fact, the production of meth has made an interesting shift. We've certainly, at one point, were busting meth labs, left and right. They started out with a heavy emphasis on those in Pierce County, and then Pierce County, the meth producers moved out towards Kitsap County, and some came up here and out to Clallam. Now I think most of our methamphetamine is being imported from Mexico, but we also still have locally made methamphetamine. You can actually make it in a 2-liter pop bottle now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of frightening.
Yeah, that is.
I've always considered methamphetamine to be a drug of despair. I mean, imagine putting something that's got Drano into your body.
It's got Drano in it?
Drano or Drano-like products in it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I didn't know that. Yeah. That's terrible.
Yeah. So, and what happens is oftentimes you'll see methamphetamine users with the horrible complexion, losing teeth, and that sort of thing. What's happening is the methamphetamine is throwing their pH balance in their body off, and that's why you're seeing some of that.
That's terrible. That's terrible to think about. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you today about was drug court. And I know at one point you actually called it hug court, but that was sort of before you were involved with it. Can you tell me your evolution on the whole thing?
Sure. When I first heard about drug courts coming out, I was somewhat cynical, skeptical that they would actually work. And so, I unfortunately applied the term hug court to them. Just a lot of kumbaya and nothing was really going to get produced. But as time progressed and my own clients started going into drug court and I started seeing the results there, I became a believer in it. We're fortunate that Ken Williams, a retired judge from Clallam County, I think he started the first drug court in the state, and they started getting some amazing results out of Clallam County, and then we adopted it over here. And certainly now, as the prosecuting attorney, having sat in on a number of sessions so far, it's just amazing. And I would actually encourage the public to come and watch drug court. It is on Thursdays at 8:30 in the morning in the main courtroom in Superior Court, and to say that it transforms lives is an understatement.
Wow. So members of the public could come and just sit and listen to it?
Absolutely. What happens is the drug court team meets, and the drug court team consists of Judge Harper, myself, Richard Davies from the Public Defender's Office, Ford Kessler from Safe Harbor Recovery, and Detective Brett Anglin from the Sheriff's Office. And we will have a screening of all of the cases that are in drug court. That starts at 7:30 in the morning. That one is a closed session. And then we come out into the courtroom at 8:30. The drug court participants are seated around the tables. And then we just start going through the list and hearing what each drug court participant has been up to, whether they've had a great week, a lousy week, where they're at in terms of their struggles. But we also start hearing a lot of success stories with those that have been in drug court for a much longer time.
Well, so wait a minute. You said something that I wasn't aware of. You first experienced drug court when you were still in private practice. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So some of your clients went to it.
Yes.
And were some of them successful? Did it work?
All of my clients were successful.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we can't say that that happens all the time. We just had a young man that failed out of drug court last week, and that's unfortunate. But the flip side is, even if somebody fails out of drug court, if they've been in for a while and they've had a prolonged period of sobriety, the hope is that they still have picked up some of the skills that they need to get help if they see themselves backsliding.
Huh. Well, let me understand something. Let's say I get convicted of some sort of drug-related crime, and you offer me the chance to go to drug court instead of jail. Wouldn't it be just a no-brainer? Of course, it's easy to go to drug court. It's tough to go to jail. Is that how it works?
Just the opposite, actually.
Really?
So in drug court, a person is forced to confront their demons. You can't get through drug court successfully without having done that. And that's extremely difficult. And we've talked to addicts that have spent time in jail. And some of these addicts may be looking at jail sentences that are not all that long, relatively speaking. You know, for you or I, doing a day in jail would be extremely difficult. For some of these folks, they've been in and out of the system so long that they could do 3 months standing on their heads. So for some of them, just going in and doing the time, sitting back, relaxing, is not that difficult for them. But going in, dealing with what it is, you know, abusive childhood, you know, molestation in childhood, or, you know, domestic violence, and confronting those issues head on is what really is difficult, and is what ultimately changes their lives.
Wow. I talked to one former meth addict who told me that she regarded it as sort of a vacation time. She could kick back and watch TV, get her meals brought to her, and get healthy, she mentioned. She would get healthy. But then she said it was always her plan at that stage in her life to go back out and get high as soon as she got out of there.
This is somebody that was in prison, I take it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true, and I think that that's probably, on some level, a fairly common experience for some of the folks.
Well, now, the term drug court, to me, court means there's a judge and there are lawyers, and at the end of the day, it's bam, you're in jail, or bam, you're whatever. But I did go to drug court and sat in one time, and it's not like that. It's not like it's over today. How long are people in there?
At least a year and a half.
Wow.
And so what they'll do is they'll come in once a week for drug court, but they're not just coming into drug court once a week. They're also meeting with their treatment team to deal with drug issues, to deal with other mental health issues. So many of these people are dual diagnoses or multi-diagnoses, where they've got an alcohol and or drug problem, and then they've also got PTSD or depression or some other type of mental health disorder going on. And so that is being dealt with during the rest of the week, and then they're expected to participate in some form of self-help group at least 5 times a week as well. So drug court is when I had clients that were looking at going into drug court, I told them that that really needs to be their all-consuming focus of their life at that point in time, sometimes to the exclusion of employment. Many people in drug court initially are not employed because the first phases of it are so intense. And then as they get to a point where their treatment is more stabilized, where it's not quite as frequent, then they can start focusing on other aspects of their lives. I think one of the things to keep in mind is that these are truly broken people. If they've made it into drug court, they are truly broken. And so our goal is to try to help them rebuild themselves.
So at the beginning, it sounds like they're going for you said 5 meetings, and the drug court, their group things. How many meetings might they'd be attending at the beginning.
Oh, my gosh. I'm sure they have no less than 10 to 15 hours of meetings per week.
And that includes counselors and group sessions and everything like that.
Exactly. No, yeah. And I think, you know, 15 hours might be on the low side. And then they're certainly encouraged if they feel the need. And some of them catch on to this right away, that the minimum is not necessarily the best answer for them. So you'll see people that have attended 11 self-help meetings in a week also, you know, instead of the minimum of five.
By the time people get to drug court, they're pretty bottomed out, as you said. Mm-hmm. So I presume that means they don't really have jobs, they don't really have homes, steady sources of income other than taking money from grandma or whatever. So what does the group behind drug court do to try to help that?
So we have we're tied in with OLECAP. We can help people get housing. There are other work. The social services system kicks in. There's help with getting people hooked up with that. In many cases, folks will not have driver's licenses, so they'll work with a public defender, Mr. Davies, to help address issues related to their driver's license. And it's just a slow, tedious process for many folks to make it from that bottom of the barrel.
Well, Mike, we've been talking about all the good things that come out of drug court, but all of this stuff, you know, the counseling, the help with housing, all of that costs money. Why should we be doing this? I mean, why shouldn't addicts just go to jail? Why are we paying for this?
One of the things that Washington State has that the legislature has done that was actually a good idea and is helpful is the creation of an agency called the Washington Public Policy Institute or something to that effect. And what they do is they do an evaluation of programs. Do they actually work? Are we getting a good bang for our buck, quite frankly? And, for example, one of the programs that we used to have is the Scared Straight program, where you take youth out to the jails or the prisons and you scare the daylights out of them. And what we found in our research is that it actually increases recidivism. So we don't do that in Washington State anymore. Why spend money on a program that's going to make things worse?
Yeah.
Drug court is just the opposite. It actually works. In terms of dollars spent, in terms of results obtained, it's actually much more positive than prison. Prison costs us money. I'm not sure what the daily figure is for someone to be in prison, but I'm sure it's around at least $60 a day. And we really don't get much bang for our buck. The person goes in there, they spend time, you know, watching TV, as you indicated, with that one person. And the output at the end is a little bit of supervision, but not much. Whereas in drug court, they're actually forced to deal with these demons, as I've mentioned, and we actually get positive results. We know that the taxpayers' money is being spent much more wisely with drug court. We're getting better results in terms of reducing recidivism. So quite frankly, aside from being the right thing to do from a moralistic, humanistic perspective, it also makes sense financially.
Even knowing what forms to fill out and how to apply for things.
Sure. And also, you know, sometimes I can think of one woman that never made it out of elementary school. And so there's help and focus on getting their GED. Everybody's expected to have at least their GED by the time they get out of drug court. So there's emphasis on education as well as treatment.
Well, and in terms of treatment, the session I attended, at least two women were talking about getting help with dental work because they were meth addicts, and as you said, they lost their teeth.
Sure, and we know that poor dental care can be the source of many other health problems systemic to the body. So there's that. It's interesting to see people that have started out looking so run down and come out having beautiful smiles. One of the most rewarding parts of drug court is graduation day, and we'll have a picture of their booking photo up against a current photo, and the difference is night and day.
Yeah, one of the guys showed me his pictures, the one when he was booked in a current picture, and I would not have thought it was the same person. It did not look like the same person at all.
Yeah, it's these people are when you're first encountering them are not only they're down, but they're they're potentially dangerous. You know, they, some of them have broken into, you know, businesses. They're doing whatever they can to support their habit. But if they've succeeded, believe it or not, and this is a bit of a shock for me, is that if they have truly succeeded with their program, you actually would not have a problem with them living next door to you. Hmm. It's that transformative.
Amazing. And do many of them end up holding jobs and being successful members of society?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's amazing. That's amazing. How many, roughly, how many people have graduated in the years that it's been in?
You know, actually, that's a good question that I don't have the answer for. I know that we just graduated a class of 9 people about a month ago. And so that was the largest graduating class that we've had since then.
Yeah, well, it would be interesting to find out those statistics. Okay, well, I hate to tell you this, Mike, but we're almost out of time here. It's been great talking to you. This is Maryam McNellis at KPTZ. FM, Port Townsend, 91.9. I've been talking with Michael Haas, the Jefferson County prosecuting attorney. Much of our discussion has been about drug court, which is really a fascinating program that helps get people back on track, bring them back to society after they've really been at the bottom. It's had some remarkable successes in turning around some hardcore drug addicts. This has been something of a series we've done for the past couple of weeks, talking with attorneys, but also talking with a couple of addicts who gave their perspective on what it is like to go through this. Charles Little and Jody Ruther were meth addicts, and both have graduated. Jody's been out a couple of years. Charles is a very recent graduate, and both of them are doing well in their lives and are very happy. If you go to our website, kptz.org, you can listen to all 3 of those shows as podcasts. Look on the left side of the page. Look at podcasts, scroll down to Our Town, and look for my name. You can listen anytime you want to. I want to thank Michael Haas for being on the show. He's our new prosecuting attorney here in Jefferson County. Thank you so much for being on the show, Mike.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, keep listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, for more dynamic, eclectic, local programming.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Maryam McNellis and engineered by Sonny Flores.